Session number 3959, reel number 2.
Sergeant Whiffen, Reel 2. Did you find the African recruits as easy to train as the English conscripts?
They soon picked what a rifle was for. Yes, they didn't take them long. In fact, some of them were brighter than the English conscript troops I've been teaching. Except for one man I remember in Shropshire, he was Solicitor's clerk. He wouldn't wear the uniform or anything, but by the way, he was a nice chap. I used to like him, really. And so, well, he would be intelligent for having that job. And he used to do the wonderful writing, Old English script. Yeah, and he'd write that as quickly as I could write ordinary. I got to write an address and envelope for me to my home. And they spoke about that afterwards. You learned to write properly, hadn't you? But he was wonderful. But the rest of them, you know, well, I can understand it. They didn't want the army at all. But the Africans, they picked it up. And they wonderfully clean they kept themselves, these King's African Rifles, yeah. Of course, we know they were taught that way. But I liked them anyway. We had one, I picked out a young man called Luca Casilli. He was a smart, upright man. He was pretty intelligent. He'd been to a mission school. And then I had a servant that allowed me. I had one called My Boy, Asmani his name was. We called him My Boy, but he was a married man, really. He was all right, too. And I used to follow wherever we went, they came and said, well, Luca, he had to come because he was in the King's African Rifles, but this boy, the government paid his fare. They allowed him to come on the boat with us. They paid half his fare.
Did he bring his family?
I never saw them. They didn't sleep anywhere near me. He didn't sleep in a tent. They slept out in the open. He got 10 rupees from me and 10 rupees from the government. So he didn't do so bad. He was happy enough.
Did you speak in English or in Swahili?
He spoke most of it in Swahili, but the same source didn't let it on. He understood. He spoke enough English to make himself understood. And I knew a little Swahili, or enough to get by.
What sort of weapons were the recruits being given?
Oh, Lee Enfield rifles. Mm-hmm. And a chopper thing, they call it
machete?
Yes. Mm-hmm. In fact, I brought one home with me and we used it for chopping wood for years. A lovely bit of steel. Yes, and with these machetes, they'd do more with them than they would a rifle, really. They'd build your house in about a day. With these machetes, they'd go out and cut the timber down, put it on these poles down, and I'd strip strips of bark off to tie them together with, and that thatch and the walls and roof and lovely places, but if you went in when they were built first, but not after somebody else had been in. I didn't fancy we were told not to anyway. I had a tent at Tabor, yes. Oh, I didn't tell you how I got to Tabor, did I? Oh, we went down to back to Dar or to no to Mombasa and then down the coast to Dyson Lamb. We had a lovely smell coming across the sea from
Zanzibar
and Pemba. Yeah, the cloves, you see. And I see there was a wreck of a ship there, a warship had gone down with a lot of people on. Yes, a naval ship. I forget the name of it now, Pegasus or something like that. But it was still there. Most of us sticking out the water. And went out to Dyson Lamb. And I remember going out on the sea there. There was a German ship in the harbour there, been sunk. They tried to block the harbour up, and this drifted to one side. We used to go in the sea there swimming.
Was that where you saw the turtles?
Oh, no. Well, not. We had I was up the coast 5 or 6 miles. These great big turtles. You could sit on the backs and ride till they got into the water, and you had to get off, of course. And yeah, I remember going across into the sea there, in the bay at Dyson Lamb, and taken two or three grenades with us, or Mills bombs, chuck them in the sea, and up come the fish. Yeah, just pick them out of the water. And then from there, we went up on the railway to Deborah. You had to go steady on the railway, been disconnected, you know, Germans had sabotaged at several places. But we got to Deborah, and then this prison camp, this has all been done in a hurry now because the war had finished. And
what did the countryside look like? Did it look as if there'd been a war?
No. Well, it's a huge country. And all the armies sometimes were miles apart, and sometimes they'd catch up with each other. But they never saw each other for a long time.
But by this time, von Leto had been...
Oh, yeah, he'd been chased all over the place. Yeah, and he still got these followers following them, but he'd lost a lot of men, all Negroes, of course. He'd lost them through disease, and then the remainder had orders to come to this camp. It had a little name of the place, I'll not forget that, but it was about 4 or 5 miles from Deborah, and that was built in a sort of a hollow place, and we put 2 or 3 machine guns on the high ground around it, just to protect it, well, defend it. You didn't want any defending, you didn't want any catapults, even them poor soldiers of the German army. They were dying there every day, bury. And they were terrible, stay thin, and they've still got followers there, women and children following. And they were starved.
How many do you think came to the transit camp when you were there?
Oh, well, some 20 days, nothing, none come. And then you get a batch, you see, and they kept dribbling in. Sometimes you get a couple hundred come. But oh, what a state they were in.
What did you do with them when they came in?
What did we come? Well, took their clothes off and gave them patrosis and a shirt or cloth for the women, and they laid about there. Next morning they were dead. What we did, we dug holes, two big holes every day for those that were going to die the next day. See, they were too weak to dig, with the KAR to dig them. And then some of they can start to get better in health. We fed feeding them up well. You just go out and shoot food for them.
What did you shoot?
Oh, wild pig, zebra, when we see them, gazelles for self. Yeah, they were nice. That was anything.
What else did you eat? What were the rations?
Their rations was dates and rice, chiefly, and meat, a bit of meat. And I remember they used to light the fire and stick there a bit of meat on end of a stick and just hold it over the fire for 2 or 3 minutes and then eat it, you see, it was all juicy. Then it hadn't even started to cook, but that's the way they ate it.
What did you eat?
Oh, we ate meat. And we ate mealy flour, and my boy used to make things with it. And biscuits. Yeah. What else did we... whatever we could shoot, yeah. Because the meat we ate that was killed in the morning, we ate it at the same night, but sometimes we didn't get any. See, they hadn't got any. And I didn't fancy that. But if you shot a gazelle, you knew that it was fresh.
What happened to the natives who didn't die in the camp? What did you do with them?
They got better. In fact, they picked up pretty quickly. If they did anything wrong, they were flogged.
What sort of things would they have done to about that? Running away?
Stealing food, mostly. Yes, and then they got better, and then you get a batch of them, say, perhaps 100, ready to go. We want to get them away as quickly as we could, make room for the rest, you see. And they were given a new shirt, or tunic-like, and a pair of shorts or drill, and they didn't wear any shoes, of course. And they found out where their village was, and I'd send them to the nearest station. Well, station, it wasn't a station, it was a place of railhead like. And I'd give them enough hoot to see them home. And you should see the packs. Well, some of these got 40 days to walk after they got left the train. So then they had enough food for 40 days. I only give them a severe lecture. And I took a train load back to a place called Dodoma once. And about 150, I suppose. And used to stop the train. Well, they had to stop to load wood up. It didn't have coal. They had all logs of wood the engines used to use. And I'd let it get... I had a dozen Askari soldiers as guards for them. They didn't want any guards. And you know, I should let them out in the morning to do the business. And one morning there was a woman who had a baby. And
on the train?
No, when they got out to do the... Oh. She had a baby instead. We was there about an hour while the engine was taking on water and fuel. And when the train was start, they bunged her on the truck. And the baby, she joined the train again. And off we went to Dodoma and saw the district commissioner. He was only a young chap. And he gave him all the lecture. I had them all lined up and gave him a lecture about the new big Buana. There's a new one. And he was very severe and all the rest of it. And they had all gone back to their villages and they must not join any more armies. But they'd be round occasionally to hear any complaints or carry out any sentences or punishment if they'd done wrong.
How did they take all this?
Oh, all right. They felt well, you see. After all that, that's what put new heart into them. They felt well and got full, bellies were full. Yes. Oh, when they came in, you see, we searched them. They didn't go out and anything. But they'd got some German money, most of it paper money. Yeah, they didn't know that, though. We gave that back to them and kept the rupees, silver rupees. And then there was some money there with holes in it. It was like pfennig or something like that. Gave them that back.
What did you do with the rupees? Where did they go?
Oh, we spent them. Went back to Dar es Salaam on the way back. Went in a hotel and spent them there and brought some home for souvenirs and some of this money with holes in. Oh, yes, when we... Dar es Salaam, yes. No, what was it? Yes, Dar es Salaam. Me and another sergeant, it might have been Mombasa, I don't know. We fancied some fish. We hadn't had any fish for months, and we did fancy some. And there was an Indian there. Well, he'd got a stall selling all sorts of food, tinned food, and there was some herrings and tomato sauce. Oh, I did fancy that. And so did this other sergeant. So I asked him how much it was. He quoted a fantastic price, pounds. I thought, you're not going to catch me like you do the Africans. I said, well, give me some. I forget what it was. Now, what we thought that should be. No, he said. Anyway, I said, get over that end of the stall and I'll get over there. We start to, we'll tip a stall over and we start to move it. All right. So we had them for what they should be. But they rob these Africans cruel, these Indians. See, they don't work. Not heavy work. And they're all shopkeepers or something. And they treated the Africans as if they would, like the white man did.
Which white man was this? The settlers?
Yes, the settlers chiefly. The officers, they respected them, same as did I. They treated them like they did us. They were privates and we were sergeants. But the settlers, they were like dogs. If there was a bit of a path, they couldn't walk on that. They had to walk in the road and all things like that, you see. And punished for every little thing. Yes. I felt sorry for them because they were human. And one, I thought to myself, one of these days, they'll boot will be on another foot. They won't put up this road. If they're educated, if they can get education, they'll take over the country or get it back. And I thought, I'll never live to see it, but I think I have now. It's coming that way. Yes, this year. But the Indians, I didn't care about them at all. They went out there to build the railway, you see. They were nearly all worked on the railway, but then they've got little storm shops, and they exploded these Africans. As soon as the wages, they'd got the wages, they had to spend it with the Indians. Well, now we're going to away from the subject, you know. We're on about this prison camp. Oh, yes, when we're foraging for food for ourselves and shoot something for the natives, we came across a bit of a clearing there, and there was seven Negroes hung there, been hung, all dead, of course. And we found out that the settler had them killed, and I asked for what reason. He said, well, one of them had stole something, and this settler didn't know which one it was, so he hung a lot. Yeah, that's the way they used to go. Life was cheap, you see. Well, I got that way as well, but death and that, I didn't care. I didn't recall it. Because I remember when I was going back to Luce, yes, there was part of the trench here we had to go through, and there was a couple of Germans laid there, all the places that was. We had to walk over them, and every time we stepped on them, the breath came out of the mouth, and that noise, and we used to laugh at it, see. Oh, you get hard and cynical.
Did you see any other sort of settlers there, like missionaries?
Oh, yes. Yes. Once when we was out foraging for what we could find, we stumbled across this mission school. And a Roman Catholic it was, and we got along well with the padre there, or whatever he was. He sold us some eggs and something else, and it was getting dark then, so he supplied a guide with us to go back to our camp, because we were practically lost. We had enough trouble to find ourselves in the daytime. Yes, and we went back again and got some more. And after that, he sent some over by a missionary boy to us. Little eggs they were, and little hens, but they were nice to change, you see.
Did the missionary ever come to the camp to see the German natives?
No. He was a Frenchman. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Did you ever see any Germans, not natives themselves who were employed by the Germans, but any white Germans?
No.
Are they all gone by this time?
Well, they had to get... All the white Germans were in the army, you see. They were all fighting.
What about the officers? Did you see any German officers ever?
There was one, I remember I had the malaria, and they put me in a truck to go back to Tabora Hospital. And there was a German in the same truck with me, but he was buried. I don't think he got over it. But we couldn't speak to him. I didn't want to, and he couldn't, so that was Tabora. But no, the German, we didn't see many German wards. They had to report somewhere else. And the Negroes, they probably brought them there, and then went off to another camp. That's how I saw this one, I reckon. But I saw plenty of Germans in France, dead and alive. Yeah.
What about malaria? Was that a real problem?
Oh, yes, yeah. This, the second time I had it, that's when I went to Tabora Hospital with this German. And the officer there, when I was getting better, he said, asked me if I'd applied to get for a job. You know, they ask you if you want to stay on. They were badly wanted white men there to work on the railway or in the post or any government job, and highly paid they were going to be. I said, no, I'm going back to England. He said, it's just as well, he said, because I shouldn't have allowed you to stop.
Because you weren't well enough.
Yeah.
Would you like to have stayed on?
No.
Why?
I enjoyed it. It was a beautiful country. Well, it isn't place for English, mosquitoes and disease, and it's all right for holiday. But in the high parts, and Nairobi is a nice place, all around there, it's like a hot English day, but you get in these low places, marshy places, and it's terrible, and you're swarming with mosquitoes. And yeah, still, I was young and I was strong, and a lot of the chaps who came out with me, I never saw them. They went away to hospital and you never saw them anymore. Though I don't suppose many of them died, but they went back to England. They wouldn't let you sign on for longer than 2 years, anyway, because they knew you wouldn't be much use after that.
What did you do when you got back to England?
Oh, yeah, I didn't tell you. When I got back to England, when the doctor, he advised me to put in for a pension, you know, see, go for a medical board. Yes, and he arranged for me to go to Aldershot. And I got to Aldershot, and the medical board had been the day before. Yeah, and I'd got to wait a month. But I stuck it a week. I thought, oh, man, enough of this. You know, I wanted to get home. Also, I wanted to get home. And I, instead of going to hanging about there through a medical board, I went to Purfleet. We got demobilised, you see, come here, darling. I swear it was on my papers where I'd got to be demobilised. And they give me a suit. I could add a suit or 19 shillings. One out the two. And I had £30 gratuity. That's what I had. Of course, £30 was a lot of money then. But not what I should have had. I don't think any of us should have had what we've been through. And that would be in April. End of April.
1919. Mm.
Yes.
And what did you do in
Civvy
Street?
What did I do in Civvy Street? Went back to the foundry. Mm. Oh, yes. Went back to the foundry. But instead of having 7 bob a week like I did when I left, I got 26 shillings a week. Yeah. I don't want to boast, but I must have been a good tradesman because I went straight into what they called the big foundry and worked for the big stuff. And it was a foundry where this Halstead foundry, they made anything. They'd take any pattern, anything that cast under 5 tonnes, they'd take the pattern and make it. They got men who could do it, you see. But in most of these foundries, they can make one thing and nothing else. I enjoyed that, but till I had a brother-in-law who was a little builder. He got some work to do and he wanted someone to help him. So I said, I'll last for 6 weeks off at this foundry. And I never went back anymore. I liked the open air. And after a couple of years, I was on my own boss. He was working for me, though he was old. Yeah.